Hello, welcome along. That was a bit of a loud one, but welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. We have a new co-host sitting, well, not, I was going to say sitting beside me. You're sitting in Italy and I'm sitting in the Netherlands, the marvels of modern recording. We are talking to Robbie Britton. How are you doing, Robbie?
All right, Sean, I'm all right. How are you?
I'm very well, very well. We're back after Christmas. We're ready to go.
Well, we're starting rolling. I wouldn't say ready to go just yet.
Give us a bit of time to warm up, and then once we do, we'll be full into our pace by the time you know.
By July, anyway. I think.
Are you looking forward to 2020?
Yeah, I mean, it's a new year, and I just, yeah, it's the same as the last year, isn't it? We just do as much fun stuff as possible.
Yeah. We only get one opportunity to do, you know, to live our lives, so we might as well take advantage. We only get one shot at 2020, so yeah, go for it, everybody. That's what we say. Was 2019 a good one for you?
It was a different one. It was all right. I mean, there was plenty of positives, but there was injuries and all that kind of stuff and all, which is a new feeling. How about you?
Running's not been a very good year, but that's only one part of my life. I've had a little baby, so it's been quite nice to see her growing up. And I'm actually looking after her. I've probably bored everyone to death on this show about talking about my daughter, but yeah, I look after her full time. So yeah, we've been becoming friends. She's becoming more interesting. She points at stuff and shouts at me now. Yeah, so that's been good. We had Christmas with our parents and stuff, and she started to cry for her mum more than cry for her dad. So yeah, I've fallen down the pecking order in the last month, which has been disappointing to my ego. But anyway, it's been nice.
You could use that excuse to get out for a run.
But we should introduce.
You'd be right.
She does, yeah. We should really introduce you to our listeners. So lots of people in the running community in England will have heard your name. But for those who don't, we have got listeners abroad over the pond in the US and in across, well, a couple across the world. We've got a few different countries listening. We should introduce you and what you're about. So I thought by asking you, how did you get into this whole running lark? How long have you been running?
I've been running about 10 years now, I think. A whole decade. And I was just basically playing every single sport I could with very little actual skill. And the only beneficial factor having me on a team was that I could run for ages consistently. So I was like centre mid on the football pitch, just playing rugby, American football. And I was only good at running. So I decided to take that out of the other sports and just focus on the running, and did a marathon because a friend of mine was doing one and finished 2 hours quicker than he did. Decided I should try and do more of this, and just kept going, running a longer and longer distances until I started winning. Because if you're not winning at a shorter distance, you just go longer, and eventually you'll find a distance you can win at. And then I made a career out of it.
Nice. So where's your major success come then? Is it in sort of 24-hour races and that sort of style thing?
That is 24-hour racing. I got to that distance and found I could. I still haven't won a 24-hour race actually. Yeah. So that's incorrect. Maybe I have to go longer. Yeah. But that's what I'm good at.
Yeah.
I run for Great Britain on the 24-hour team in the past, and I finished third at a World and European Championships. That's probably that was a highlight. It's just been downhill from there.
Yeah. How do you manage that at 24 hours? Have you got the ability just to switch off, or you just have so much going on in your head you don't get bored for that long?
It's the opposite, actually. People always say that you just zone out, but I'm quite... in the moment, I'll focus on the lap, on the form, on my eating, my drinking. I find that that makes the time pass quicker.
Right.
If you're just really focusing on the moment rather than if you focus on like how long you've got to go, it's horribly depressing.
Yeah.
Because you could be 8 hours in and still have, 16 hours to go, which is like your body is hurting.
Yeah.
Your mind is fatigued and you've got 18 hours to go or 16 hours to go. That can be. So if I focus on just doing one lap at a time, just jog around this lap. It's not fast.
Yeah.
Just jog around. Maybe chat to the German team and then deal with the next lap.
Yeah. And you've got involved with fast running, so you're writing there.
Yes. Well, I'm more editing than writing these days. I started, an Irish chap called Niall Mooney started it.
Yeah.
And I did a couple of articles at first and he says, do you want to come on board? And that was, that must have been, 2.5 years ago, I think. I am with Tom. We edit it together, and I do. I probably do less writing than I like these days. I do more editing of other people's writing, which isn't as fun.
Brings you power,
it gets stuff a little.
Yeah,
Yeah, I'm not power hungry. I'm happy to. I'd rather just get attention.
But that's brought you into. You've done a few shorter distance races and stuff more lately because of that, I guess. You've done 5Ks. Did you do the 5K up in? It's not Antrim. Where's that 5K in Northern Ireland? That's
from Armagh. I'm not a horse, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking of Aintree now. I did Armagh. That come more from just my own interest in the sport. I love running. I love it as a sport and as the history of it and just the range of disciplines. I do want to one day do an 800 meter.
Right.
Because I've heard it's the hardest physically. So I just want to try that out. Put myself in the hole.
Yeah.
But I can't. You can never. It's very hard to fit it into a training schedule.
Yeah, yeah.
And all that 800 meter when you're training for a 24 hour race.
Yeah.
But yeah, Armagh was good. That was just. It made me feel like a bit of a beefcake. It was good because I had more upper body strength than 99% of the people there, which is rare because I'm a small man.
Yeah, yeah.
So I felt like I was just in a herd of stick people, like fighting. It was good.
And you've based yourself out in the mountains for a while now.
Yeah, we've been in Chamonix for a bit and we've now moved to Italy.
Wow.
Because property prices are tiny.
Yeah.
So we live in a small town called Coggiola. Which, but the only point of reference I can give is that it was the birthplace of Fila.
Ah, right.
The clothing company.
Wow.
Yeah, the Fratelli Fila. The factories are all shut, so everyone's left.
Yeah.
And we've moved in, not into the factory, but an apartment near it.
Oh, great.
So it's nice.
Lovely.
Mountains on the doorstep. I can see a trail right now from my office window.
Beautiful.
I have an office as well. I've matured.
Wow. These property prices must be low.
I don't know whether I should. I mean, I should say we bought an apartment for €5,000.
Wow!
Make that public knowledge, because then I can maybe we'll bring in an influx of other runners. Because I wouldn't mind a couple of more runners.
Yeah, a couple of training partners. Yeah. So how's your Italian then? Have you been learning lately? I shouldn't say anything because my Dutch is pretty terrible. But yeah.
I mean, I've got my. It's better than my Dutch.
Right. Yeah.
But that's not saying a huge amount.
Yeah. You'll get there. But we're gonna be together. Yeah. Well, not literally together. I just mentioned before we're living in different countries. But
are we in a relationship now? That sounds a bit. I mean, that's escalated quickly.
A 5 second chat, and here we go. Yeah, we're together podcasting wise for the next month. So if you remember, listeners, we talked about now we're going to have like theme based shows, and we're going to have a theme each month. So Tom Craggs. He joined me for the first theme, which was diversity. Any feedback about that is gratefully received. Reviews are gratefully received on anywhere you get your pods. If you enjoyed that, we're now going on to running and mental health. So me and Robbie are going to be talking about running and mental health this month through the whole of January. Because is this month the one where everyone says it's like Blue Monday, or is that February? I can't remember. But certainly when the New Year started, everyone's sad to be back from Christmas and back to work. It's a month where. Mental health issues are kind of to the fore, I guess. So we thought it'd be good to tackle that and either looking at both the benefits, I guess, of running, but also the negative consequences, perhaps, and how running can slip into addiction and negative areas, let's say. But before we do that, we have to look back at news. So the first show of every month, we look back at the month we've just had and the news from the last month. And usually we do like a bong from the news at 10. But because there's nothing really to talk about. Like we had a look through what's been going on, and it's slim pickings for the month of December. We did. There was the. I'm going to do a bong just so we can go through. But bong, the first bong. There was the European Cross Country Championships, which we've already talked about. So I'm not going to go over that again. Uh-huh. So we'll move on from that. And the second bong is the Ribble Valley. This is for UK listeners. Ribble Valley 10K. Have you raced that race before?
No, I have not. No, I haven't done huge amounts of. I want to that and like I know Telford 10K and stuff. Sounds like it'd be fun.
Yeah. Well, this is I think this is over between Christmas and New Year. I think it's about the 29th of December. But in Britain, the standard of distance running, particularly in the men and in the women, is on the rise. So we had 12 men run under 30 minutes, and 9 women ran under 35 minutes. Titles were run by Jess Judd. Who's looking particularly impressive at the moment. She ran 32.17 and Mark Scott, he ran 28.32. So when I was running well, there was nobody really running 28 minutes for 10K. Probably Chris Thompson was the only one, maybe. nobody else really was running that quick. Oh, obviously, Mo Farah was the same age as me, so that's he was running well. But at the moment, there's loads of guys. It's really good. And we're talking a minute about another race that was over the Christmas period when we had another five Britons under 29 minutes. So
why do you think that is, Sean?
Is it the shoes?
Is it the shoes?
I don't know. I can't say that.
Well, Jess actually put a post up about how she'd run that Ribble Valley 10K in normal shoes.
Really?
She was. I retweeted it from Fast Running and got some pushback.
Really?
From a chap, yeah, from a chap who it seems he likes to run in his Nike shoes.
Oh right, okay.
He didn't like that we were highlighting that Jess ran in Adidas. So I mean, does that mean that we can deduct more time from Jess's time? Is that how that works these days?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Or do we?
It's all. What's the word when you? You should be staggered.
Controversial.
Yeah. So she was just wearing, could you even call Adidas normal shoes these days? We don't know what they've been up to in the last few months, I guess.
No, you should be in plimsolls, shouldn't we? Yeah. Or like sandals or something, and then we can all be even barefoot.
Yeah. Did you see that guy? If you look at Run Africa's Twitter page, right? So Run Africa, I've been out to train in Addis Ababa with these guys. They're really good. They're a charitable-based company. There was an Ethiopian fella, I think this December, who won a marathon in plastic sandals, like Crocs. Did you see this?
I did not see this. This
is amazing.
That.
So if you all think that the only way to go is these Nike 4%, you can still win a marathon in Crocs. And he did it this year, this December. So yeah, maybe the shoes aren't as important as we think.
What did he run? What kind of ballpark was he in? Was it one of those marathons where the winning time was 4 hours, was it? I'm guessing he ran like 2:20 something.
No, I'm thinking it was like, 2:20 odd. I'm going to try and find it in a second, but we'll, by the power of audio. It was pretty impressive stuff to run that quickly. I think it must have been 2:20. There we go. This is great radio. I'm scrolling down.
You're looking now.
Yeah. You can cut this.
Well, my nan wears Crocs, and she's never going to run 2:20 for the marathon. So I don't know if that's definitely like cause and causation or like... Because I think she got slower as she started wearing Crocs.
Oh, really?
But again, that could have just because she's in her 80s, so it's unsure.
Yeah. So I've got it. It's Run Africa. I'll retweet it right now. He is Amogne Sedenku. Sorry about pronunciation there. 2:28 in socks and sandals. Incredible.
Socks and sandals. I mean, that in itself is a crime, isn't it?
Yeah. They're basically like jelly beans. If you see them, I've retweeted them a few weeks ago, but it's essentially wearing jelly beans and socks, and he's run 2:28. Jeez. Anyway, but that's good. It's good to see the British guys sort of running well. It's nice to see the standard. I think.
Yeah.
In response to your question, I think it's having one or two up the standards. Someone like Callum Hawkins to come in and just sort of say, you know, forget it. I'm going to go out there and race these guys. It's just brought everybody else up, I think. And just everyone now knows that they've got to up their game to be able to compete. I remember when, this is a personal story, but I remember first ever time I got picked for England, which is when I was running well. And I went to, we went to Spain to run a cross-country race, can't remember which one it was. And I'd never run against Kenyans before, really. You know, in a half marathon, you kind of do, but they just run off at the beginning, doesn't really matter. So I was in a competition where it was. I was probably having to compete with the best in Spain and a couple of Kenyan guys. One of which was, I think, he's Olympic 2012 bronze medalist, right? And Johnny Taylor, who now doesn't run anymore, but he won. He was quite good at the time. I think he won various trials. He was always part of the Great Britain team. I remember talking to him about it, and he said, obviously, showing wisdom beyond his age. He's younger than me, but he said, like, they're just human beings. They're no different to you. You've just got to go and do it. And actually, from that point, like. It brought me on because I was like, oh yeah, hang on, I can go and do this. It took somebody, him breaking down that barrier for me, and him, he just went out and tried to win the race against these guys, and I couldn't believe it. And from that point, seeing him and being around him, then it pushed me on, and I nearly beat the bronze medalist, the Olympic bronze medalist. He got me in a sprint finish, and from that point, that was the year I ran my best, and I should have gone and done more than that, but it takes someone to just push that boundary for everyone else to jump on and realise it's possible, I reckon. So, yeah.
It changed. I spoke to a friend of mine, Nigel Mine, who ran, he broke 40 minutes at Armagh last year.
Yeah.
And part of it's the perception of where you think you should be in that pack.
Yeah.
So if you think that those Kenyans should be 200 metres ahead of you,
yeah,
then you let them go there and you just kind of sit with it. And it was the same at Armagh. Everyone was about 10 seconds faster than they were the year before.
Yeah.
And Nigel was just like, well, I'm going to sit in. I mean, I'm where I am. He's watched it work. And he's running around and he's like, well, these geezers who I usually run close to, they're here, so I'm in the right place.
Yeah.
And that was his perception of effort. The physical pain didn't change. It's the same. It's worse if you're running faster.
Yeah.
But that's this information that goes up to your head. And then you perceive, well, it hurts. 5K always hurts. It's not like, but I'm in the right place because Jack Gray's just ahead of him and so-and-so is just behind him. So he just sat there. And I guess that's part of what we're seeing in British running at the moment. Yes, there is an it'd be silly to deny that these shoes are making a difference.
Yeah.
But we're seeing people go like, well, actually, I should be up with those guys. Or they provide themselves with that belief.
Yeah.
And I touched on this in an article I wrote last year. If you buy a pair of £250 shoes, you make sure your nutrition's on point.
Yeah.
You make sure you get a good night's sleep beforehand. You do all the other little things that can bring up that standard as well.
Yeah.
So I wondered if we took all those shoes away, we'd still see an improvement underneath that. Because it's creating dedicated runners. Because you don't want to be in a pair of bright green or bright pink shoes on the start line and be out of shape, do you?
Yeah.
You just look like a dick.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Sorry, can I say rude words on the podcast?
No, that's fine. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So I can feel it. I have a pair.
Yeah.
I dislike them. They are ugly.
Yeah.
Right. And if I put them on, you are self-conscious that you don't want to turn up and not give it your best.
Yeah.
At the end of a race, you don't want to like not be smashing it because you put those shoes on and you, in a way, you've made a statement about your own intent.
Yeah.
And it's a clear one for everyone to see.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm going to do now? You said that. I'm going to go out and online. I'm going to find Kathy Freeman's spacesuit and I'm going to put that on. Because if you don't run well with Kathy Freeman's spacesuit, do you remember that from the Sydney Olympics? When she wore that full body suit with like, you put the hood over.
Yes.
And yeah. If you're wearing something like that, you've got to be performing well. So yeah, that might give me the push I need to run.
Michael Johnson's, didn't he have the gold shoes?
He did, yeah.
Michael Johnson, was it Barcelona or something like that?
Yeah.
He had a nightmare or something. But you put them on, that's a statement.
Yeah.
It's coming onto the mental side of sport, but it's a psychological statement, isn't it? You're convincing yourself you should be wearing those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get a pair of gold vapor flies.
Yeah. We should move on to the next bong. So I'll do it. Bong.
Oh, yes, go on then.
We both noticed this one. This is what we thought was a Kenyan cross-country national championships, but actually was the last in a series. It's basically like a local cross-country league. And Paul Chelimo, Olympic silver medalist, he wasn't even in the top six in this race. So local race in Kenya. There's loads of photos of it out there online. If you search a guy called Evan. I'll put a link to it or I'll retweet it. Also, Martin Cox has took some photos on here, so it's my coach, Martin. Incredible standard for a local cross-country league to get the Olympic silver medalist not even making the top six, which is incredible. We're aced won by Leonard Bett, who's under 20 years old. He's just got married, apparently. We read on a story a bit earlier. And Betty Chepkomai was the, if I can say it properly, was the women's winner. But yeah, incredible.
I think you nailed it.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, the standard was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Yeah, crazy. So a couple of guys from Britain over there giving it a go. Must have been quite an experience to see the first 100 metres and those guys go flying off and dash. I think Paul Chalice.
If you haven't seen a video of the start of a Kenyan cross-country race or actually experienced one in real life, just go and check it out because it's a sprint to the finish at the start.
Yeah.
I know a British cross-country race is they're fast starting. It's a bit, especially somewhere like Parliament Hill where you know where it's going to narrow down a bit. But these guys look like they are sprinting for all it's worth for the first however many metres.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Check it out. Paul Chelimo couldn't manage it, but hey, I'm sure he'll be back for the track in the summer and sort himself out. But you noticed, didn't you, who was the second place? The second place, the male.
Oh, it's the second place, Daniel, was it Daniel? Let's have a look. Daniel Simiu. I'm going to massacre the pronunciation now. Simiu. Yeah, that's definitely not how you say it, but go for it. He was like 7 seconds back, and he just set a course record the week before at the Corridor de Hu. Oh, no, this is pronunciation like purgatory. Hules, which is in Paris, right?
Yeah.
So it's like a 10K race in Paris, and he ran 27:12 or something there, which was...
Yeah.
I should check this. Yeah, 27:12.
Wow.
Just the Sunday before, rocks back to Kenya. Having set this fantastic course record in Paris, and then he's second by 7 seconds at his local cross-country league.
Yeah.
Brings it back to earth.
Yeah, it does a bit, But that is our next bong. Seamless link in there from us. It's because five Britons were under 29 minutes in the men's race. I didn't have any, there wasn't any details of the women's results, so I didn't manage to get anything from that, which is a bit of a shame. But Phil Seisman, he came eighth in the race, pretty amazing result. 17th, Emil Kares, he ran 28.38. Ben Connor was 18th, 28.37. Josh Griffiths was 28.41. And Kieran Clements, he ran 28.52. So, yeah, more evidence that British distance running is on the up. I think Kieran Clements was keen to say he also rode the race that in non-performance enhancing shoes. So well done, Kieran, for staying true to Adidas.
He was in the Crocs as well, then.
He was in the Crocs. Yeah, he was wearing Jelly Beans.
That is That is fantastic.
Congratulations to him for that. Nice one. I reckon someone's got to bring that back. Bring back the Crocs. If they're doing it over there in Ethiopia, it's got to be an interesting trend. Wasn't there a trend after the Born to Run to wear those kind of like Tara Mara sandals, and you'd see loads of these bankers run at the Thames in these, with their Achilles about to pop.
I think there was wasn't there a massive lawsuit against Vibram in the end about like in America about how these barefoot shoes were destroying everyone's Achilles and calves. I don't think that was the shoe people's fault. Like, I didn't make people wear them, did they?
No. But didn't they insinuate it was going to be like wear these shoes and you'll reduce your injury risk, and actually the way the guys are running in them making it worse. So it was in their branding rather than their actual shoes. But hey.
That's disgraceful.
Yeah, anyway. But that's our news. That's our news feature for this month. There wasn't much else. But did you get any running done over Christmas?
Me? I DNF'd a 24-hour race.
Oh.
Yeah.
How many hours in?
I flew to America. 4.
Okay.
Which is a personal worst.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I did wear the 4% shoes as well and ran. I mean, it was about, oh, blimey, it was about 10% of my previous, no, about 6% of my previous best. Yeah. So, I mean, it was the opposite effect of that percentage. I wanted to improve by 4% and I ran 4% of what I was capable of due to a knee injury. Oh, so it was a long way to go to run around a track for 4 hours. Could have done that at home.
Yeah. Oh, that's all right. I won't rub it in. I won't bring it up anymore. But hey, God.
No, that's all right. I don't mind. I like the comedy of it. Like spend a lot of the year trying to reduce your carbon footprint and then fly to America to run around a track for 4 hours and then sit there eating all the food. I had all the food for 24 hours set out, so I just continued eating it.
Oh, really?
It was good. I had a massive bag of these Sour Patch Kids. That was fantastic eating. Yeah. It's a lot easier to eat them when you sat down as well, watching everyone else.
Yeah. So you stayed for the remaining sort of 20 hours to watch it?
Well, my friend James was also running, so we stayed until he completely capitulated as well. It was like a team effort. We come over. Yeah. I think they're starting to think that us Brits are real jokers because we turn up and don't finish their 24-hour race. But we're trying. I'd love to finish it.
Yeah.
I have finished one in the past. But, my friend James didn't have a good race either. So he ended up with about 100 miles in, I think, 17 hours, which sounds all right, but it wasn't what we were after. So I ate my food until James stopped. And then we all went home and went and got coffee in the morning instead.
What is a good result then? What would you be aiming for in 24 hours? How far would you want to run?
Like 200. I would have been happy with 250 kilometres, but a good result is 260, 270. British record is 274, and I would love one day to run that.
Okay.
And I think I can.
Yeah.
I can on the. It's not like a pipe dream saying, like, yeah, I want to break the world record for 100 metres.
Yeah.
I am capable of doing it. It's just, it's getting it right on a day. And I got this long-term little niggle that I'm trying to sort out that stops me running a long way. Okay. I can run short distances.
Yeah.
But I've got to fix that.
Yeah. Ah, shit. Well, I've got, I'm not injury prone. I'm just illness prone. I think I've had every single bug that could possibly come through. I'm not blaming my daughter, but it is her fault. She's very good at picking up stuff, and then I get it after her. But I even get weird ones. I had one the other day where I went out for a meal with some mates, and I came back, and I had, it sounds weird, but I had food poisoning without any of the extraction process. If you know what I mean, I wasn't sick or anything else, but I was suddenly sick for 24 hours, just couldn't like move, and then I was fine the next day. It was just really weird. So basically, any illness possible is jumping on and I'm getting it.
Are you,
Right.
Are you sure you're not just a bit soft?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. I've got to toughen up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you? I mean, maybe you're. Is your daughter catching the illnesses off you?
So yeah, maybe like, that's the way around.
Yeah. Yeah. She should blame you.
Yeah. It's probably that way. But I did run a personal worst, I think, for parkrun. I think in
did you?
Well, I think I can't remember if I run slower, but I run 16:44.
Oh, well, that's a humble brag, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think I probably have run slow, but I can't remember running 5K. I can't remember, but it was a tough one. But it was my first race back for a long time, so I'm pleased enough that I did it. And
nice.
Onwards and upwards. Got another 10K next week, so we'll see how
it's,
that goes.
It's a solid run though. I think I ran I got a 21-minute park run because I missed the start because I was having a shit. So I had to catch everyone up. So I think I ran about 16 and a half, but yeah. It went down as 21 and a half.
That's a long one.
Yeah.
We have got one feature we forgot to mention. It's we're taking it basic because you guys at Fast Running, every month you do, or every week rather, you do a summary of the parkrun performances of the week. And you're calling it the fastest parkrun. And we're taking that data and we're going to take the fastest parkrun of the month. I mean, you were saying a minute ago off air that January's been pretty quick with a couple more.
Oh, it's fireworks already.
Yeah, we're starting as we mean to go on in 2020. But there's been our two fastest runs. It was going to be, there's a guy called something like Taramana Turanga from, I've totally said that wrong, from Wimbledon. He ran like 14:41 in Dulwich. But the fastest one was Daniel Jarvis, rather. He ran at Birkenhead. He ran on the 21st of December. He ran 14:39. And Abby Donnelly is the fastest female this month. She ran 16:31 at Market Raisin Racecourse on the 28th of the 12th. So, yeah, well done, you two. You're the fastest parkruns this month. Hopefully, we'll have an even faster round in January. Well,
we will.
Yeah,
we definitely will. It's interesting. You do get some decent, like, especially over Christmas when people go home to their families and they want to escape, obviously, for like a quick run out. You get some quick times around the Christmas one. It's one of the harder, like, you see the standards go up and down different weeks. If there's like road relays are on, the standards drop. Or if the national cross country that weekend, if you want to get under the top 10 and you don't have a club, I mean, that's the weekend to go for it.
Right,
but it shouldn't, I mean, parkrun top 10 should not matter more than running for your club. Just putting that out there. We will chastise people on those weekends. Yeah. So I remember looking on a road relay weekend and thinking, this geezer runs for that club and he would have been quicker than their fourth leg runner. What's he doing? Should have been down at the club putting an effort in.
Because it's not a race after all, as they've said a million times. It's not a race. Not a race. It's just a bit of fun. But anyway.
I mean, I enjoy riding the top 10 and I do the UK one every week and people love it.
Yeah.
But it still, like, it doesn't actually, it doesn't really matter, does it? It's just parkrun.
Yeah.
It's lovely. Yeah. I love that people run fast there. Well done to Daniel and Abby for being the fastest of the month.
Yeah.
But go down Ribble Valley. Yeah. Smash out a 29 minute and all.
Yeah. So we should move on to our topic, having underlined sirens in different cities around the world. And this month, as I mentioned, we're talking about running and mental health. So I guess most people who are listening to this podcast, well, perhaps a lot of them don't do the sport specifically for their mental health, but we all know the benefits of physical activity on your mental well-being. So increasingly you see lots of research about how it affects different parts of the brain, which help you reduce stress, which help you sort of gain a mastery of your conditions, which is a word I often read, because my main job is to I sell run clubs to companies. So we have coaches that go into different offices and we take guys out for a run. And looking at all the research that I've been through to try and sell these clubs, it's obvious that outdoor exercise makes a real difference to like your productivity, to your creativity, to essentially your entire mental well-being. So that is increasingly becoming obvious now to everybody. So I guess we don't really want to hark on too much about that and kind of the benefits, because we all know them. We all know running, what running does for us. Like, I'm sure Robbie, you're the same. If you're not running, like now, it's you need something else. It's quite hard to be your upbeat chippy self if you can't get out and run. What'd you say?
I think it's interesting because obviously I can't run at the moment, and it is something I think of. But I think it provides a focus,
yeah,
like a forward focus. And if you, without that, if you take a lot of your kind of weekly motivation from your running and the progression that's providing you, and other areas of life don't have that kind of focus, then if that gets taken away, then yeah, it can be a little bit disheartening.
Yeah.
And it might not even be like, for me at the moment, I'm a little bit lower because, not because I'm injured, because I don't really know the timeline or how to get better. We're still kind of a little bit stabbing in the dark.
Yeah.
And that's where the frustration comes from me. I could be focused on anything. I have other walks of life. It's just the running isn't the biggest part of it. It's obviously a large part for me because my work is as a coach.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about it, and I have a range of athletes all ask me how I'm doing, and I have to repeat that I'm not running at the moment, and it keeps coming into it. But
yeah,
I think, as you say, there are other aspects of your life. So I think running can be really good for mental health. I'm no expert on the subject,
yeah,
but if it's your one and only focus, it can become an unhealthy focus.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you become overly reliant on it. And when that gets taken away,
yeah,
you feel a little bit lost.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, like you're saying, with having the routine and the structure has been, I don't think, I'm definitely not the same person I would have been without running. Like, it's given me, through my teens, through my 20s, it's given my life structure and purpose, and there's no way I'd be the same person if I hadn't discovered running when I was that young. But there is, like, certainly over the last few years, there is a pressure that it's brought to me. Like, I do stupid challenges, like I set myself, I've done it through the podcast, to try and run sub 220 at Frankfurt and this sort of thing. And once you give yourself that kind of target, and things don't go to plan, because your life doesn't map out the way you want it to half the time. So I was ill and I was injured, but you've attached this goal and you've invested so much of your life into achieving this goal that it's really detrimental to your well-being. So it's a difficult one. There's both sides to it.
You just got to set easier goals, man. That's why I went for 2:30, 10 minutes extra.
Yeah,
you could have had a little sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Well, I've stopped doing it. I've stopped setting like goals like this. And I think it's probably pretty wise. Like the guys that seem to achieve the most are the guys that, I guess, get a bit flexible with what they're trying to do. They're going out and they're racing and trying to enjoy themselves, really. I think, having spoken to lots of Olympians and lots of guys at the very top of their performance, they're not going out there and saying, I need to run, you know, 2:18 by this date and by that date. They're saying, you know, if I want to train hard, get myself into the best possible shape so I have a crack at running well at this race or well at that race. It's not so. I think when you're slightly below that tier, you're a bit more focused on, I don't know, reaching out and trying to hit specific time goal targets that actually are pretty irrelevant, to be honest.
I think it's important to enjoy the process of it all,
yeah,
if you're, and the journey. Because if you're solely focused on an outcome,
yeah,
you end up, it becomes all about that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the running can become a chore. The workouts are hard, especially if you're not like hitting these goals. As if you're just focusing on being the best you can,
yeah,
and doing the best you can that day, then as long as you're honest yourself that you've given it your best shot, then the disappointment's less. When it comes to like running races, I go out there and I do my best.
Yeah.
And so like the disappointment from running 50K or 48 kilometres in a 24-hour race, it wasn't huge because I knew that I gave it my best shot.
Yeah.
Like it was obviously, I took about an hour of just sitting there, my head in my hands, eating Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah.
But then after that, I tried to walk again to go to the toilet or something. And I realised I tried my best. My leg wasn't working.
Yeah.
And it's the same with any other task. At Armagh, I set myself the task of running under 15 minutes. And part of that was just because it makes for a better article.
Yeah.
But about halfway around, I realised I wasn't going to make it. I was like, right. And then my head dropped because I'd set this target that was seemingly, possibly unachievable because I wasn't in that kind of shape.
Yeah.
And it just had a negative effect on me.
Yeah.
I dropped my head further. Whereas had I been out there focusing on just doing the best I can over 5K,
yeah,
I might have run 15:10. I'd only run 15:25,
yeah,
which was still a PB. So I had to be happy.
Yeah.
But I think I was about 130th, which was a bit humbling.
Yeah. It's true though. It's true. And as a coach, that's one thing. It's really hard to try and impart on people because it's easy to try and just to grab at something like, you know, these arbitrary barriers, sub 3 hours, you know, sub 40, 10K and stuff. And everyone wants to achieve those specific things that they can then tell their friends about and blah, 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 blah. It's quite hard to try and get people into the mode of going out and enjoying a bit of a race, have a bit of a battle with a couple of people, but don't put too much stock on it. It's quite a hard thing to impart, particularly if people, I guess, if haven't gone through in their teens and 20s, like racing cross country or racing these different races where it's not about time, it's about just going out and enjoying the battle. It's quite hard to impart that then on people who haven't experienced that. But
It's interesting. So just now my dog Rosa running, and she's a prime example of, she just loves to run. Like, you go out the door, she doesn't care if you're going for 2 minutes or 5 hours, she is excited because she's doing what she loves doing.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, that's how I feel. If you're not feeling like that when you go out for a run at least a few times a week, then maybe something needs to be looked at. If you're dreading getting out that door, then yeah, maybe it isn't as positive a part of your life as it could be. Yeah. Whereas if you're getting home from work and, oh yeah, I'm looking for a little bit of a run, or going to see the club and I'm looking for like a race at the weekend, then that's a healthy part of your life.
Yeah.
If it's providing a lot more anxiety, and it, like, obviously anxiety is a part of racing and running, it'd be unnatural to be completely oblivious to it all. But if it outweighs the enjoyment, then you've got to start saying to yourself, what have I done that's, I'm not enjoying this enough to get the reward out of it?
Yeah.
And I know that when I go out for a run, even if it's a half an hour shuffle to see if my leg's working, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to being outdoors and maybe seeing someone locally here that I can hammer my Italian with, or just the pure joy of going out for a run.
Yeah.
Or if that's not there, then yeah, you should start asking whether what you can change to bring it back.
Yeah, absolutely. Be more dog, everybody.
Yeah, be more dog.
2020.
I wrote an article in the eyes of Rosa about coming back from injury.
Yeah.
And like, often as a human, we compare ourselves. I mean, I'm sure, yeah, I'm definitely sure you do this as well, and I do this. We come back, and a new season, you're like, oh, God, I run that race like 10 seconds quicker 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Not taking into account that you're a different runner, you're a different come back from injury, or you've got more endurance than you had back then, or you're just like, your shoes are different.
Yeah.
Rosa goes out, and if her leg, she's got a metal leg, right? She's 10.
Yeah.
But it doesn't bother her. She just runs different now. She's not like, oh, she never sits down and goes, oh, I used to be able to run way faster than this. Yeah. She just loves running as fast as she can at that time.
Like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And every now and again, she gets reminded when she tries to jump over six and like smashes her leg into it. Yeah. But she refuses to let it enjoy that, like being in the moment. And that's that kind of, I think it was Natasha Cockrum did one of her fast 10 posts last year was comparison is the thief of joy. Yeah. And you can't enjoy things if you're comparing it to what you've done in the past.
Yeah.
And maybe that's something that's limiting a lot of runners out there, is that they're comparing even like the first section of their run. I know you do a race and you're 5 seconds slower through the first K. You're thinking, oh, I used to be faster than that.
Yeah.
It might just be that it was a headwind the different way around that year, or it was a bit muddy at the start, but
yeah.
We compare, and it takes away some of our enjoyment. So it's being more, is it mindfulness or something like that? That's a new age term.
Yeah. Well, we want to hear people's stories. So you can get in touch with us. Get in touch at letsgetrun.co.uk. Winston, people like maybe who've had mental health difficulties, how running perhaps helped you through those, how if running has led to mental health problems. We're interested to hear your stories if you're willing to share them. And you can get in touch at letsgetrun.co.uk. You can send an audio message, and you can do that through WhatsApp. So go on WhatsApp, and this number, it's a Dutch number, but it doesn't cost you any more money. So +31 612 679529. Just leave a recorded message. So at the bottom of the WhatsApp, if you hold down the record button, you can leave a recorded line, and I can listen to those and pop them on the show if you want to. Or just send us a Twitter or a Facebook message. Let us know your stories. And hopefully over the next few weeks, we're going to be talking to a couple of athletes about their kind of mental health struggles. We're talking to a couple of scientists, and we're going to bring you those stories. So, yeah, get in touch.
I love those voice notes. They're brilliant.
Yeah.
They definitely irritate some people when you just leave a voice note instead of typing.
Yeah. Well, I'm loving it now because if I've got, I'm trying to get away from talking on the phone in front of the baby because we wanted to try and not use phones for as long as possible. We know it's inevitable that one day she's going to want her own phone, but when she's one, she can stay away from that. So we're not talking on phones. We're not typing, certainly. So whenever the wife wants a message, she WhatsApp texts me, telling me to get something when I'm out and I'm carrying around thing. I'll always just record a message to her. So it's much easier. So yeah, use them. I use them a lot. I don't know why I've gone down that line, but anyway.
If you've got a friend that you know's on public transport, you can leave a really loud voice message and then they play out loud. It's quite embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's a good trick.
But well, Robbie, what are you up to this next couple of weeks? You're busy with, I guess, getting back to full fitness. You got any?
I got a good set of physio exercises I'm doing every day. I'm going to spend the next hour after this phone call doing some stretches, lunges, kind of mobility exercises. Doing that a couple of times a day.
Lovely.
Which is nice. Yeah. And we bought a Fiat Panda, so we're going to go collect that in the next couple of days.
Oh, great. Exciting.
So that's what's going on. I can't drive, so it's not really that exciting for me. hopefully I'll do some running next couple of weeks.
Great.
But other than that, what about you? What have you got? You've got a 10K coming up.
Yeah, that's 2 weeks' time, January 19th. I'm off to London this weekend because I have got a couple of presentations. So I work with News UK and I'm doing a presentation there about goal setting, which is going to be interesting. And then I'm doing the charity Shelter are doing a marathon training morning. So I'm going to be doing talking about marathon training over there with them. So two presentations in London.
Nice.
So it should be quite nice. Hopefully get a few runs done over there. If anyone's about, fancies a run, text
get
me.
Get to a park run, mate.
I might try and get to a park run, yeah. I have to check my training.
Can I set you a challenge? Try and get in our top 10
have you seen me? I just did a 16:41, or 44 maybe.
Yeah, that was a hilly one. You never know. We'll get you in the women's top 10.
Yeah. That's more achievable, I think. Yeah, I'll get down Dulwich. That's the fastest one, isn't it? I think. But yeah,
Dulwich is that's the quickest few there. Yeah. Alex Yee, Andy Badley, they run some quick times there.
Yeah, I can still claim that I am faster than Alex Yee at the Hilly Fields Parkrun, which is technically his home course. I've still got the course record there, and I think 15:30 or something. It's quite a hilly course there, but he had it before me. So I'm technically on that particular course. I'm a faster man than Alex Yee, which is.
Does that fill you with satisfaction?
I've not really thought about it that much. I only thought about it then. So yeah, to be honest,
it's like Conker, isn't it? You know, if you're Conker has 10 victories and you beat someone who's got 30 victories, you get all their victories. You become like a 40-round conquer. I don't think it works in running.
No,
because I beat a Kenyan geezer once and he was walking. I don't think I got his kind of previous records.
Nah, never mind. I'll leave that one. I won't dine out on that one any longer. Lovely. Right, well, I'll leave you to it. Enjoy your physio exercises and we'll see everybody next week.